fit the ground level, if this is the section, let's say, below ground, you can imagine all the servo systems of the city, mainly the warehousing, energy, the conditioning, all the machinery that are keeping the city alive, including production and maintenance. Above the ground level, you have really the urban activities of the community, from the private, from the most private to the most public. I will skip that. Now, I was faced with trying to present this three-dimensional approach to the city, try to explain the variety, the possibility that this opens up, and so that one person would not think of it as a solid, a cube, let's say, that would be multiplied by 10,000, and you would have 10,000 cubes, and you fit humanity in those kind of schemes. So I came up with about 40 different schemes, and I used 30 for the MIT book. And I had some water communities, and this is one. There are two subsystems here. One is the production center, showing here in section, and then the main urban center development, which is this, let's say, ribbon with parks and residences and so on. The productive center would be harvesting from the water whatever material is sourced. It could be minerals or proteins or chemicals and so on. There is the processing and the storing, the shipping. Some of the work connected with those activities, let's say investigations, technological and scientific investigation, and then some of the urban life connected with the main urban ribbons. This is a, let's say, a city that can develop from one or two of those centers of production into a large cluster of structures, as it is suggested there. Whatever you see from now on are not blueprints, are just symbols of a certain concept applied in a certain way. And the concept, I think, is not personal, but the applications are personal. So you might agree or disagree with the concept, or you might agree or disagree with the application of it, and the two are separate. I think the concept is very fundamental and very, it's really the methodology of life to invent and develop itself in something more lively. And the applications are mine, and so they can be as controversial as you can make them. One example of an arcology, so my existing but not used, is the dam. The dam is a very large, sometimes gigantic structure built by man in a specific spot, transforming the ecology of a large area, geographic area, and becoming the center of many kinds of things, water available for domestic uses, for recreation, for power production, for irrigation, roadway converging to that point. And this massive kind of blind, dumb block of concrete, if this was designed at the outset as a carved-out structure, you would make this into a building which could be filled with life. So the dam redesigned according to this procedure would become a center for life. Could be a city, a health center, a research center, a university center, and so on. And this is suggested by this model and this sketch. This is a section cut through there. Against the water body, you could have mainly storages and some industries. You could have heavy industries at the foot of the dam. You have power production, linear cities carrying water and power. And then at the outer membrane of the structure would be for residences. That means homes and apartments. And then into the larger and integral part of the structure, you could have the, what you might call the public life, from merchandising to learning and culture. This is an elevation showing the residential, this is the private, this is the public, and then the development at the lower level of gardens, parks, and so on. The same concept for a smaller dam. Again, you have a structure which becomes cellular, and then you can use the inner spaces for different kinds of activities. A land, this is another, a much larger structure for them. This is the water body, the towers for the intakes for the production of energy. Two of the land arcologies. I have to caution again, those are not blueprints, those are very schematic indications of a certain organization of space to serve a large number of people, in this case about 400,000, in this case about 300,000. This dimension is never more than 1.5 miles or so. Those are extreme cases. This might be close to 1 mile in height. You don't have to go that high, a third of a mile, a quarter of a mile, it's already a very high structure. You can do quite a bit with it. Though it's a very large structure, it's a very, very small city. If you compare these to the extension of Dallas, for instance, I don't know how large is Dallas, but chances are it might be about 200 square miles, which is a very large structure compared to 2 square miles by, let's say, 1 mile. The car is stopped at the edge of the city. It cannot get in for the simple reason that there are no roads. The city is roadless. That takes away about 60% of the space given to the car, for instance. By this device, you reintroduce legs as one of the main means of moving around, which seems to be quite natural. So you have elevators, escalators, moving sidewalks, and mainly legs, bicycles, and so on. At the edge of the, let's say the skin of the city is where you have the dwelling, the private life of the of this organism, so that the city becomes in a way an organism with over 1,000 minds, as I call it that way, and the thinking of this city is done on the skin. So it's a skin which is composed of those minds, of those people, of those activities. The inside is where you have the sap of the city, the cultural development, whatever deals with the social activities of the community. This is a twin city, if you want to call it that way. Again, this is no more than 1.5 miles, I think, or 2 at the most. So you are at walking distance almost from wherever you are to wherever you want to go, including your friends, the library, the marketplace, the movie house, the club, whatever is that you're seeking. So you are wrapping around the core of the city the residential systems, and you integrate everything into a one building. That means that you are very close to the outdoor. No matter where you are, you can walk out of the city and be in the open landscape, or vice versa. If we were ever to adopt the idea of the linear city, you would have a certain number of advantages. One is that you would have a main logistic, if this is a cut through here, a main logistical system at the center, which means the flow, the main flow. transportation of people, transportation hardware and produce and so on, including possibly an airport, an endless airport on the roof. And then you plug in the urban system wherever they are necessary, and those systems would create the access for any dwellers to the main logistical system, to the open landscape, and to the cultural centers and social centers of each urban structure. By somehow adopting this criteria of, let's say, of a city that, of a linear structure that can go on for thousands of miles, you would have to bridge obstacles. And this is a suggestion of a canyon bridged by a town of about, I don't know if it was 40,000 people. And the same here, you have a river, and the town, the linear city, bridges the river and keeps carrying on its own functions. Some of the very quick models of other ecologies showing the relationship between the Empire State Building in size and other ecologies. This was for 450,000 people, this about 300,000, 250,000, I don't remember what was this one, and this one 30,000, which is this one. So again, you see, it's really a building that doesn't have to be much larger than a large building like the Empire State Building, and it would be somehow a center of life for a pretty sizable community. This is this concept developed a little more in detail, a cutout showing the inside, which is the place where you have the merchandising, the working, the learning and so on, and the outside where you develop mainly the private sector of the community. A view of the interior, the center there, which is indicated as sheltered by a membrane. If you have extremes of climate, it becomes almost mandatory sooner or later to go into this kind of approach, because that's where again you find a frugal approach to the problem of survival and development. This is still the about 30,000 people suggested, and this was conceived as a rural town where the farmer can have an urban life if he so chooses. I'm not advocating that for the whole of mankind to become city dwellers, but we know that there is an urbanization process, or there was an urbanization process, and the bulk of mankind is going to be urbanized. And that's still the same 30,000 population suggested. This is a larger one, about 300,000. And it's really schematically a cluster of skyscrapers, but instead of being sticking out of a one level or two or three level platform, so that you have segregated structure, you integrate them by connecting them at different levels in different ways, so that you increase the flow, you increase the communication system, the interaction system, which means you tend to desegregate physically a community so that you favor a possibility of a less segregated society. This is about 270,000. Playboy had a nice montage of this one in June. But unfortunately, the scale is totally wrong, so it looks gigantic. It's much smaller than what it looks in Playboy magazine. But anyhow, it's the Empire State Building is about that height. And at this level, you have parks, gardens, and so on. And then in this, we try to suggest the variety of development that you can somehow build into the skeletal system and keep renewing and rebuilding and rephasing and so on, so that the life of the city keeps going on according to the contest of the present. Now, being given to us some kind of an abstract exercise when I was putting down those tourist schemes, this was one of the most abstract. It's a 1 kilometer cube, and it would serve about 450,000 people. And again, the outer section is where the private sector of the life would develop, which means you can build in it your own home. It can be a mansion, can be a small home or so on, or you can have an apartment. And then inside, the development of the what I call the public sector of the city. One of those examples was a capsule. And by doing that, you find out a number of things about the self-reliance of a community and the dependence or independence with the outside and with the environment and so on. In this case, being a space capsule, you have to be utterly self-reliant. So in a way, you interiorize really a chunk of universe, let's say, and you can rely only in the inner life of the system, because outside is death. It's the non environment of space. Another reason for doing this was to try to suggest that if we go into space, and sooner or later probably we will, we should try to bring in some of the biological aspects of the Earth. So this is a cylinder, you see half of it in this model. And this cylinder is lined with vegetation, so it's an inner landscape, and it works that way because you have a rotation on this axis, which produces a state of weightlessness at the center, and a local gravity. You become heavier by moving from the center toward this landscape. So you can float out of your dwelling and fly by your own means within this landscape and land and do whatever you have to do within this city, being this the center of it. Excuse me. This was a scheme for the meadows near New York, and there was a talk about having a third airport in the area of New York, Philadelphia. And with Rutgers University and some of the Ford Motor Company input, I developed this idea. And the basic idea is that instead of having airports, air terminals, which are known places, which by the way is utopia, known places, you make the terminal into a city. So this is an air terminal of 1 million population. And according to the wind patterns, you have the landing strips, and the aircrafts are pulled in or are pulled out, taxied into this taxiing ring, and you land practically at the center of the city, being the taxiing rings there. You never fly on top of the city, you always fly tangential to it. And as I was saying, instead of going to the airport and then try to get into the city from there, you land into the city or you take off from the city. This is 800 meters high, 2.5 kilometers in diameter. It would be for about 1 million. Again, the outer, including those skyscrapers all around, are for residential purposes. The inner is for the life of the city itself. And I want to remind you at this point that we are not the rats, so we are not dealing only with a social contest, we are dealing with a social contest immersed into a cultural contest, which is somehow the sap of the city. So whenever we compare rats to ourselves, we forget that we went beyond the rat reality. The underground, indicated there in purple, is for industries. The ground level is parks and gardens. This was a model of this idea. This whole thing was done in 1 year, including the conception of it, so it was pretty schematic, and there are many things that I would change, naturally. This has to be seen all green, as the green belt around the city. That's the taxing ring. Gardens and parks within the structure, different levels. For this diagram, we made, for this scheme, we made some diagrams. If this is a section, very schematic section through this, through the building you saw, we gave in minutes and feet the distances in time and distance, separating activities. So that if you are this I think is a repairman or so, you can see the swiftness of moving from one event to the next because of the smallness of the city itself, so that you increase your performance if that's what you're after, or you can use your time in better ways than driving, for one thing. Now, this implies a number of very important points, implies the reduction of the bureaucracy, the reduction of the size of any kind of service, the reduction of the cost of any kind of service, from delivery of anything to retrieval of anything, including garbage, sewage, postal delivery, groceries, anything that deals with the logistics of this system is far more swift and frugal again than what we need now with our bloated and gigantic structure we call our cities and our towns. And finally, the Arcosanti project. This was an idea for a piece of a site that we were not able to obtain, and this was still a two-dimensional development. Then I took a little part of this and I developed it into what you see roughly here, and this is Arcosanti. I'll have a much more detailed model to show you in a few minutes. But very schematically, those are apses, defining again different kinds of environments according to the orientation. So we have around the building, we have those structures which are used as soil, as ground conditioning, as far as climate, light, breeze, view, and so on, supporting, being part of the integral part of the structure, supporting the roof, supporting structures inside, bridging or floating from the apses, and containing themselves, dwellings. There are 17 feet in thickness, so that inside you have the smaller modules for this, private module for this structure. The columns contain larger structure, the beams, again, larger intermediate modules for living, and the roof, many kinds of modules for residential. The top of the columns, large grounds for homes, indicated here schematically with those cylinders. This is the land we bought. This is the Agua Fria River. We have about 3 miles of it, and 2 miles are wet all year round. There is a little stream running. This is a volcanic rock, and I keep forgetting the name. And we are building on one of those ridges, overlooking some land, some farmland that we have, and overlooking a pond, which is a water tank, and it's going to be repaired, so it's going to become the intermediate use of water between the domestic use and the agricultural use. This is the actual building site, which is up there. Last year, we established the camp, which is somehow made of those cubes and larger cubes and some of the structures. This is the organic garden, recycling the garbage, making compost. The sandwich of those cubes that are serving two persons each one. That's the site. The building will be going up about there. This is one of the cubes that I'm going to use as my studio. Those are 8.5 feet. They are trying to suggest somehow, if you want to see it that way, a kind of a German monastic approach to life. So we are trying to introduce the concept of frugality from the beginning, from the outset. This is the area of one of the 30 columns in the building, and we used intentionally this to get the feeling of the space. It's a common building, the octagon. So this is part of the camp, and there was a choice between putting up barracks that are going up and they never come down, or using those cubes that can be disassembled, or they can be made into a playground later on. We are playing with silt, which is the end product of those rocks through erosion, and we are using this as a parting the compound in the casting. And those are linoleum strips that you take off afterwards, they're painted so you get a yellow streak. Those are still to be pulled out. This is going to be my studio. And this is a very schematic diagram of the plan. You see the apsis, two on the south, two on directly looking into the north, northeast, north, northwest, west, and east. Each one is going to make its own kind of environmental conditions. Those are colder than those, so we have a different kind of vegetation. We have an apse here, which is going to be for ceramics in the building stage. We have another one here for metal. This is the main structure for a batching plant with two offices and two homes. And we're going to have a food center here. Those are all in the making now. You see the structure of the apse supporting all the structures inside, supporting the roof and making, as I was saying, an environmental condition which is changing according to the orientation. We are working now on the south side, on this area, and this area. This is the larger model. A cutout of the apse, some of the bridging structure, structurally depending on the apse, the main roof, which is a four-level structure, the main terraces for the homes. And you can get a feeling on the scale, those are persons there. The apses are 160 feet in diameter plus 17 feet in depth. And we are building now those structures. This is a cutout for one of the apses, showing the smaller module. This is about 17 by 17 by 17, and it can be divided with a mezzanine. You have an opening inside looking into the city, let's say, into the man-made landscape, the cityscape, and then you have an opening, I'm sorry, this is the opposite, looking into the landscape, an opening looking into the cityscape. So you are at the divider, on the divider between the man-made and the natural. Again, you look inside of the city, you look outside of the city. this is the on the axis of the of Arcosanti, the transversal axis. So half of it will be this way, half of it will be this way. This is the batching plant. We have work, metal work here, woodwork here, production of forms, casting of forms, and then distribution of modular systems to the other buildings. It should be reversed, but anyhow, this is the. I mean the slide is turned upside down. This is the metal foundry in the process of being built. This is the ceramics work area. And then we have this building, which is the food center. There are three private spaces here. There is a main dining with the kitchen in the back, and then an exhibition room on top. We are now working on the foundations of this building. This shows one of the apses when the structure is up, it would begin to somehow express the person using it, so that each person does its own furnishing, not only but or it can choose its own environment, its own inside environment, but can also spill out by the construction of little balconies or the scheme that they're going to use for windows and so on. This, as I was saying, is the food center with an exhibition room up there. Those are all precast panels and casting place slabs. Some blasting, the ceramics apse, the main vault, which is this one, which has been now completed. It is the support of a crane, horizontal crane, which is not there as yet. And we have storages and offices and living quarters, and now we are building one of those buildings and the other one symmetrical on the other side. The foundations for this arch very substantial, because mainly because of the crane. This is 60 feet span. The making of the modules of the vault, we cast 12 of those panels, three at a time. And we use silt as a forming device. We use linoleum, painted linoleum, as a strip-out material, so that after you cast, you strip away the linoleum, you have that green. And this is this vault. We are putting up panels, and would there be a living quarters and office on this side, living quarters and office on this side. This is the axis of the whole building. We are now setting up the batching plant in the back. This is the beginning of the apse for the ceramics, looking south, as I was saying, as a sun trap. And this is under at the same center of one of the big vaults. So it's a building contained into another building, sheltered by another building. There is some other relationship. The larger apse containing the smaller apse. There is the smaller apse. This is the making of this vault. You see the linoleum there. The assembling of those panels. And, well, it's hard to see, but from a distance you see the big vault, and the building will be enclosed in that space. This is the vault after the assemblage. Before the finishing, you still have to do the grouting. The silt has to be washed away. There are some brilliant colors there. This is the ceramics apse during the construction. Those are panels making the outside arches. The assemblage of those panels. This is the ceramics apse looking up from the metal apse. There's a ravine here, and looking from the other side of the ravine, you see the vaults and the apsis. You can see some of the colors there. They have to be washed away. Well, this is a cutout of the building, and what you are looking at, it's this area here. The vault is here, the ceramics is there, the food center is going to be there. And it shows a difference in size and function between Arcosanti, which is 70 miles away, and Arcosanti. I think that's about it. I have information, if anyone is interested, about the program and so on. One thing I have to say, we are using 1.5% of the land we have for the building. And the remaining land is almost untouched.
This concludes the workshop. Thank you for participating.